This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Prez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How you doing today, Matt?
Wolfens.
Okay, that's a thing. I'm going to cut that out and use that for something later. That's ridiculous. So we're going to do a little bit about, well, I guess kind of different, but also the same of what we've been doing, as this is the first Lore Watch of our brand new year, 2021. Happy New Year. First of all, thank you for...
Before you get going, dude, if you missed it, we did a special 300th episode of the Blizzard Watch podcast where Matt McCurley came back and visited with us, and we kind of talked about everything. So, you know, maybe go watch that if you haven't already seen it. It was fun.
Highly recommended. It was a good time, and I was actually going to say that, like, it was really good. It was the best way for us to celebrate the ending of 2020 and give a little surprise to some of you that have been with us for a very, very long time with bringing Mr. McCurley back for a one-time engage. But we're going to do a little bit, like I said, different but the same. We're going to answer some questions, but we're going to be a little more focused today. Today, we're going to be talking mainly about the Jailer, and this is going to be... loose-ish. Basically, a recent quest had just come out that showed more information about the Jailer and kind of what he's doing, and it has led to some very interesting speculation, which we're going to definitely get into, and we've chosen questions that sort of align with that mostly. There's some here and there that are a little bit outside of that, but sort of loop back in. But the first one we're going to go with is we're going to talk about something from Tetsemi. And this one is, well, there's a heck of a lore drop and a cutscene when you recover 15 of the Runecarver's memories. Question and spoiler to follow. And yes, there will be some spoilers here. So if you're listening, you don't want anything ruined for you, I'm sorry.
I'm leaving. I'm not having spoilers. No, I'm done. You have the show by yourself.
Well, I guess I'll just talk to myself for an hour. Won't be any different than normal. So the speculation, we're seeing a flashback memory from the Runecarver of the Jailer coming to him and asking slash demanding his grandest design, which, given the graphics of the models, is the Helm of Domination and Frostmourne. Also, he says they were the secret the first one sought to hide. Now we have confirmation the Runecarver knew how to create them. What other weapon slash armor do you think he crafted over the years? And there are a couple things here that were sent along. There is a video of this exchange, as well as an image, which has sort of the specifics of the exchange between them, which I'll just read out real quick. The Jailer says, "Look at you, pathetic puppet, dancing on strings." Runecarver, "I will not break, I will not break, I will not." Jailer, "Fool, your mind is already broken, but even a broken thing can be made to serve. Countless secrets extracted, insidious designs forged into weapons for my arm, but I require more." Runecarver screams in pain. Jailer says, "Your grandest design to claim the final prize, the secret that the first one sought to hide, yes, your finest Mournblade, and a crown fit for the king of the damned, the vessels of Dominique." So there's a lot to unpack there, but Matt, I think you had some very specific takes on that one.
First off, Tets, I mean, I hate to once again be that guy, but you misread the statement. He doesn't say that the crown and sword are the secrets the first one sought to hide. He said that they're the tools to help gain the secrets that the first one sought to hide.
Mm-hmm.
If you can go back and just you listen to what Joe just said, you can tell he isn't saying that those weapons are from the first ones. He's saying that they will be used to help gain secrets from the first ones. How that's going to work, I don't know the answer to that question. Not even the spoilery stuff we've got coming down the pipe from like the most recent stuff that we found out about yesterday is going to tell us like exactly what the secret the first one sought to hide is. But it's clear that he wants something. That much we have apparent. In terms of what other weapons might have been made by the room carver, we have no idea. I got to say, though, I'm going to say this. Joe and I have both speculated in the past that the room carver is the Primus.
Yes.
At this point, it's practically just waving a flag at us, screaming, "It's the Primus!" Between the fact that we found out when you do the Maldraxxus quests, you know, whether or not you even join the Covenant, it doesn't matter. When you do the intro quest, when you just go through the zone, you find out that the Primus was the greatest of their weapon forgers. He was the greatest blacksmith. He was the greatest runesmith that they had. Probably the greatest in existence. And now suddenly there's this guy, this giant guy, chained up inside Torghast, making stuff for the jailer. That's definitely the Primus. I feel like that's practically inescapable at this point. And we knew. I'm also going to say that I find that calling it a Mournblade, that's a nice tip to Elric of Melnibone there, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If at any time, I guess you couldn't call them Stormbringers. That would just be like, what? Why are they called Stormbringers? But yeah, Stormbringer and Mournblade being the two rune weapons of the Elric series. So that's pretty nice. That's
also a nice also a reference to Castlevania, as there was one in there as well.
That's also a reference to Elric. It's it's just a reference to Elric, maybe secondhand, but it's straight up a reference to Elric. So that's fun. And the fact that, you know, it makes Arthas going all white and albino-y looking more texty, so to speak. It takes the subtext and makes it text.
So,
but what's really interesting is what we're finding out about Arthas through a lot of this. Not just Arthas, but the ones before him. Do you want to move on to that, or do you think we should keep talking about the...
Well, I think this ties in a little bit with the video that was just data mined, and I think we should bring this up a little bit. So, or data mined, or revealed, or given in error. However... players got it. There's another video which is an exchange between Sylvanas and the jailer. The jailer having one of his minions make or craft or modify something, and then present it to Anduin. And the interesting thing here is that one, he's modifying Anduin's blade itself. Two, he's pulling something out of either another dimension or somewhere else, and it's hard, there's really no indication of what it is, to be placed into the blade that then changes it completely. And it ties in with what we're talking about here, because there's this idea that it is a Mourn blade. And it's not just that Frostmourne was the only Mourn blade. It looks like there's been several of them potentially. As we're going through Shadowlands, we get a little bit more of that. It just seems that Frostmourne happened to be a Mournblade, and it looks like at the end of this video, he's crafted or converted Anduin's weapon into a Mournblade itself. It has that same cold, soulless energy, that siphoning stone at its center now. And it's fascinating because it puts it into, at least in my opinion, a different perspective. We always thought that Frostmourne was a very specific weapon. It might not be. It might just be a type of weapon. And you know, you can go on and talk about, you know, how that affected Arthas and what we know about it from that. But it puts that into a maybe a little bit of a different perspective.
I don't know if it means it's... I mean, it's still... Frostmourne's still a unique weapon.
Yeah, it is.
But Mournblades seem to be a kind of thing, much like Runeblades. They seem to be a step past that. And we need to find out more, obviously. We don't really know... there's a ton we don't know about what the heck is going on right now. But the scene you're talking about where they're I don't know if they made another weapon that looks like Varian's sword.
No, you can actually see in the video that the fire from where he's working, the minions working on it, is red and then changes to blue. So it looks like it's...
Yeah, I couldn't tell by watching the video. I'll be completely upfront. I mean, I watched it and I couldn't tell. But it definitely, it's exactly the same look, except of course now it's got all these jagged evil runes all over it and it otherwise looks like a terrifying thing. But what's really interesting to me is that they don't just force it on him.
He has to choose it.
Yeah, they're going to torture him. I mean, that seems pretty obvious. If he doesn't take it up, they're going to torture him until he does take it up. But, you know, they did try to talk him into it first. And this has nothing to do with the jailer, but it is interesting, and I feel like it has to be at least mentioned when discussing this. The parallels between Sylvanas and Arthas are getting even stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, like, I think, and Anduin... He doesn't actually come right out and say it. He sort of hints at it when he says, you know, oh, it's the choice you never got. Like Anduin, people forget how smart Anduin is. They forget, they know he's good and kind. They forget that he's smart.
Yeah, he's incredibly observant too. Like he picks
Anduin's a perfect example. If you play a lot of D&D, Anduin's that guy with a good intelligence, like a 14, but a very high wisdom.
Yeah, and knows how to be empathetic with it, too. Like, that's the thing, like, his character has been built over the years, and we talk about this a lot, where he seems very reactive, very emotional, but that's that empathy. Feeds off of what's around him, he understands, he feels what's around him, and that sort of plays into that moment, right? Like, he's using his empathy, and he's using his intelligence to sort of hone in on this moment and be like, oh, this is what's going on, okay.
And it's very much... I think by the end of this expansion, we're going to have a lot more about why it was so important for everything for Arthas to pick up the sword himself.
And because don't forget, that was a choice for Arthas, too. He was led to make that choice. That was the entire thing. It wasn't just, you know, go get this weapon and, you know, it'll do everything. It was led down a very specific path to put him in a position where accepting that blade, he felt like was his only option. But it was a choice.
And straight up, he was warned, you know, so too must power scar the spirit. So there's a lot to this. I'm very interested in finding out what the jailer is going for here. Like, why Anduin? Of all of them, why is it so important that it's Anduin? What is he trying to get out of this? That's the thing we still don't really know. I also going to say that I think it's fascinating the fact that he goes after Bolvar.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. That's one of the things that before and after the quest, there's a line the jailer says to Bolvar. He screams something to the effect of, you were to herald my coming. Instead, you defied me. A failure like those who came before you. So pretty much every Lich King has been a failure from the jailer's perspective. He hasn't got any of them to do what he wanted. Going right back to the first one. And that's interesting because I want to know how the jailer got... Like, if Kil'jaeden is the one who thought he was controlling the Lich King... But the Nathrezim have been working for Sire Denathrius, and thus the jailer this whole time. Is that how that we got to this place? Is it the Nathrezim? That's really fascinating to me if that's true. And the jailer's response, the way the jailer comes after Bolvar and almost takes him out, like spying on this whole thing is what is very dangerous for Bolvar. Remember that Talia was like, "You have to do it, Father. We have to know about our friends." And she might have gotten him killed, mm-hmm. or worse. We don't know what the jailer was even doing to him. So, yeah, it feels like for once they've actually tried to set up a story reason why we don't just go straight to the source. Like, there's a whole bit where I think it's Thrall, like, you know, Thrall straight up says, you know, we can't just go in after them. He's got like this full scale army that we can't fight. We can't do a full scale assault. We'll lose. If we follow our hearts and rush in, we could lose everything. That's Thrall. Thrall is saying this. That's like fascinating to me that we've gotten to a point where Thrall is the cool headed voice of wisdom who hangs back and doesn't.
Well, and I think it plays into the fact that, I mean, and again, mild spoilers here, but it's the fact that when Thrall is telling us this, he's been in Torghast for an indeterminate amount of mortal time. You know, it's the same thing with Bane, the same thing with Jaina. And when you rescue them and bring them back, it's, you know, the torture, the mental games, the trying to break them. But it's not just that. it, they talk about the shifting halls. They talk about the unending army that litters those halls. And yeah, it's sort of playing into the lore of it to sort of justify some of the endlessness and the game mechanics, but it makes sense. That's the center of the jailer's power. That's where he has his forces most concentrated. And one of the interesting things, and this is something I'm going to recommend people do when you're going through Torghast for anything, stop and look up in some of the larger areas, like in the upper reaches, in like Coldheart and places like that. When you're in a lot of these zones that you can look up and there's not like an immediate ceiling, like you're not in tunnels or rooms, it's vast and massive. The room that you rescue Thrall out of, if you look up, it continues on for what seems like forever with just cages, all of these cells, and every single one of those beings that the jailer has in Torghast is kept around long enough to be broken to serve, because that's sort of the general theme. It's you will serve or I will break you and you will serve, your choice. One of them just means you don't scream as much, but you're still going to do
it. Yeah, he makes that point. You're already broken, but a broken tool can still be useful.
Exactly.
If you can get willing service out of you, great. But if not, it's really interesting to me, though, is this. The jailer keeps going on about how, you know, he is death, but he's not. Somebody locked him in there. He's a prisoner.
Yeah.
And that's the fascinating thing. The Eternal Ones locked him in. They pinned him in there. There's just so much to this. I'm really fascinated to see how this all ends up. If we end up with, like, you know, Death Anduin or whatever. I kind of don't think they'll get there. I think they might torture him and he might come out of it looking the worse for wear. Possibly he'll look like the character in that comic, because I know someone's going to ask about it.
And that's, well, I've been screaming about that since the expansion announced, but yeah.
You know, possibly that's what it'll end up. But at any rate, he's, you know, I don't think they're going to just have him go bad and turn. But I do think we're going to get to see a lot of the, you know, what is the underpinning here? Someone else made a good point, I think, in another one of these questions. Can we just jump to, like, the points that they made that were good, or do we actually have to, like, you know, read them?
No, because I think we can just go through them, and I'll say in advance, I want to give a thank you to Titan Fuzz, Zolgath, and Tetsemi, and Zorthios for sending us the information and that we're going to be covering today. If we don't cover your specific question, please know that you are the catalyst for this discussion.
Yeah, I want to talk about the memories that you're finding for the rune carver.
Oh, yeah. I'll go for it.
Someone made the point that he's got memories of, I think it's Aenar and
Norgannon.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a really interesting point. We've been talking about this with the Winter Queen. Some of the memories are specific to Titans. You know, they're specific to these entities that are from our world. How does he have memories of them? What does that mean? And we know from the Winter Queen and dealing with her and her, you know, talking about my sister's pet, that she very clearly has some form of recognition or knowledge of our world, which I think is fascinating, because we knew nothing about anything to do with the Shadowlands until we got there, really. Lich King didn't tell us anything.
Tiny little hints. Like the only thing we really knew about the Shadowlands was that you can go to the verge of them to get a mount.
And that when we died, we went to a layer of it that we were heralded back to life by Kyrian that decided to stay back. Maybe there's more to that as well, which we can go.
I mean, the spirit healers definitely seem to be Kyrian, and that's another fascinating thing. But the fact that, you know, we know that the Titans come from outside our reality, that they're effectively yeeted into our reality, just like the old gods are. And it does make you, like, if the rune carver had memories of the Titans. Titans don't go to the Shadowlands when they die. That's canon. That's from Steve. Yeah. News. So did they have, like, meetups? Like, what's the deal? How does he know them? What does he remember them from?
Where they can travel? Like, this I've been asking. I've been wondering about this a little bit too, especially because the brokers have been getting me thinking about this. We know that you can travel between realms without just expending anima. Is it possible that beyond just the Shadowlands, there's interdimensional travel through portals, just like the brokers that you know, wherever the Titans came from?
Well, think about the in-between that we see when we're going to various places in the Shadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
In-between's like the astral plane.
Yeah, very much so with the effect. It's very ethereal and very Yeah.
But what if it's like the astral plane? It contacts not just the Shadowlands,
but everything.
It contacts other worlds, other planes as well. Well, I mean, not to get too D&D here, because this is a different cosmology, but
it's a good analog.
There's the ethereal plane and the astral plane. The ethereal plane is wrapped around the elemental planes and the prime material plane. The astral plane is what leads to all those higher planes to the prime material. And they're different planes. What if that's like the twisting nether situation versus like the in between, like, you know, the in between is like it's the plane between planes, whereas the twisting nether is like the garbage dumpster of the universe. And this whole time we've been thinking that the twisting nether was the way to travel through dimensions. And it is, but it is because it's like the universe's, it's like the multiverse's garbage disposal. You're not supposed to go there. It's just, yeah, it touches everything, but it's horrible. Don't go there. Use the in-between instead. Why aren't you using the in-between?
It almost seems like, I made the point where it seemed like our material plane is like this weird touch point of all of these other places. And it almost feels like the twisting nether is sort of like, almost like a mirror image or kind image to the in-between, but wrong and warped because of all these things that are pressing up against it. So
it's like that whole thing, you know, the twisting nether, the more chaotic the nether is, the less time seems to make sense. And if you go to the Shadowlands, especially the in-between, mm-hmm. the opposite way around, where there's no time in the first place. And so that to me is interesting. There's just finding out that somebody designed this all, like the first ones apparently created everything. It's like, what are they about? What's going on? And that to me, like with the Rune Carver having memories of the Titans, there's just a lot. The whole point about the jailer watching us use, you know, another thing that's in the same email is about the jailer, you know, watching us use the Waystone and the Shadowlands interquests, so he knows it's operational. It's like interesting to me that he hasn't done anything about it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. So let's talk about like the specifics of that question is interesting, right? And it's an interesting question. So, and I don't want to say I know the answer, but I have a speculation. So during the intro quest to the Maw, if you haven't done it yet, I know some people haven't gotten quite there yet, you escape out of this Waystone, and it's a Waystone of the first ones that is supposed to only be able to be activated by the first one. And that's how we get to Ouroboros. We leave everybody else behind. Anduin does this heroic thing, gives us the time we need to escape while an army of the jailer's making is bearing down upon us. It's one of those climactic moments. But then we start going back into the Maw. And there are a couple different mechanics that sort of feed into this. One, when you go back to the Maw, there's nothing by the Waystone. There's bodies. There's the empty shells of what you destroyed in your escape, what was taken down that are left there, but there's nothing posted there. There are no gargantuan hulking beasts. There are no Maw Sworn. There's literally nothing watching it, which is fascinating because as you do things in the Maw, you have the jailer's eye mechanic where as you complete more things, the jailer gets more irritated and starts paying more attention to you and sends more things to go try to kill you. But why? Why is there nothing preventing you from getting out? Why is he only worried about you as you're doing things? And my theory is, it's because he doesn't care. He doesn't have to care. He got what he's looking for. Because at the end of that cinematic, when you're escaping and Anduin sacrificing himself, the jailer sits, like, has this look on his face like, oh, that's what I've been looking for. And just grabs all those folks. And Anduin's the target. He's the prize. Everybody else is sort of like incidental bonus items out of the Gabuchon machine. He doesn't care. He doesn't care how many souls you rescue. He doesn't care how many night elves you rip out of the Maw and bring back to Ardenweald or the other places. Because it's a drop in the bucket anima-wise. Everything that dies is still going straight into the Maw. All of that anima that Revendreth had saved up, which is massive. And if you do the raid, do the looking for group, you go into the anima store. It basically looks like that scene in Star Wars where you're looking at, they show the Death Star and the energy that's required to fire the laser. It's like that. It's vast containers of endless anima that they've been collecting for years and eons or time indeterminate flooding into the Maw as well. He doesn't care. We get, what, maybe at this point 25, 30 souls that we've rescued? What does that matter to him? We're killing things that he's created? that aren't his favorite things. His most prized possession, most of his army, the bulk of his army is in Torghast. When we go in there and kill things, he does actively try to kill us because we're in his domain. We're in his private sanctum, but he's still got Anduin. He doesn't care what we do elsewhere until it becomes problematic for him in some capacity. And I think that's why he doesn't guard the Waystone. I think that's why he doesn't care how many souls we rescue, because it doesn't matter. He got what he was looking for. What do you think?
That's certainly part of it. In fact, that's pretty close to where I was going to go with it. I think what we've seen is that he is willing to do, like, he is the kind of person who is willing to do anything to achieve his goal. It doesn't matter how much havoc or just, he basically, the Jailer is interesting in that the Jailer is the ultimate expression of the Sylvanas mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's actually like the objective correlative of the past two expansions in the form of a big spiky dude with no chest. With a big hole in his chest. Sorry, he has a chest, just a big hole in it. The Jailer is, like, as you just said, he doesn't care. I think to the point where he actually kind of wants us to keep doing the stuff we're doing.
He keeps us busy.
He doesn't just keep us busy. He is not afraid of us, but I think he definitely has a purpose for us.
Mm-hmm. And he says as much, right?
Yeah. The more that we come in and out of the Maw, the more that we use that Waystone, the more opportunity he gets to observe us using it, so he can figure out, okay, what is it doing? Why does it work for them? He gets to, not just that, he gets to play around with the psychology of us. What are we motivated to do? When will we do it? How do we do it? It's like watching a bug. You know, you've got this thing, you're putting it through its trials, trying to figure out what its behavior is. And also, it's another point of reference. He's already studied the ones he already captured and tortured. He knows what they're about. He's got Anduin, and he's clearly working on him. But we were there, too. And we were the one that came in after them. What is that all about? And I think you get to see it a little bit. Like, when he's doing what he's doing, and Sylvanas makes the point about how they've lost, bloody heck, Denathrius. Mm-hmm. And the Jailer just dismisses Denathrius like he's nothing.
All souls have their purpose, is what he says, right?
It's weird. It's weird because that's like what everybody says. That's what they say in Ouroboros. The purpose guides all actions. Everything has a purpose. Everything is part of the purpose. The purpose is everything. And he seems to believe it too. Except for him, the purpose is getting out.
Well, maybe not just getting out, but I mean, I think it's getting out to complete whatever he feels is his purpose. I think it's grander than that.
Because then we go back to the whole thing about how he's going to claim Azeroth.
Why? Like, what's so special about it?
Is he from Azeroth? Are they all from Azeroth? Or not just Azeroth? Are they from our world? Is that where all these beings come from originally? They didn't die. They're eternal ones. But did they originally come from somewhere else?
So, I you know, this is something I've been wondering for a while, and I'm going to run this by you. And some of this is feeding into it, and I don't know how close it is. But way back when Rathian talked about rebuilding the final Titan, the rebuilding part's what's been sticking in my brain for a very, very long time, because it didn't make sense with everything else, because these Titans were just beings. They were just things that existed, and you didn't really rebuild them. They regenerated, right? They were born. Even if they were hurled into this, you know, prime material plane from somewhere else. But what if it's more than that? What if all of this stemmed from that sort of that same idea that we talked about with Diablo lore and Diablo cosmology, where everything started as one thing? Because all of the Titans, when you break them down, they're all aspects of something. They all have a specific sphere of influence. None of them are complete by themselves, technically. Only as a whole group do they balance each other out in any way, shape, or form. But when you look at them, they're not quite balanced. They're missing pieces. But when you start looking at the Pantheon of Death, some of those missing pieces start falling into place. And you have the hubris and greed and emotionality that a lot of them don't seem to have when you look at Denathrius. You have that sense of loyalty and honor that you get with Kyresta the Firstborn. You get that cold presence of purpose and duty sort of with the Winter Queen. We don't know what the Primus was, but I'm wondering if these memories of the Primus that we're giving back to him, the reason he has these memories of all these things is because at one point they were all interlinked. They were all either one pantheon or one being. And if Azeroth is the centerpiece, and I often joke about this with like Gestalt robots and from Transformers or Voltron or anything you want to put, there's always a bigger centerpiece that everything attaches to. That's how it always works in these things. What if that's kind of what's going on here? We don't know what Azeroth's purpose is. We know that Azeroth is incomplete. Azeroth is wounded, but it's important to everyone, it seems. It seems like it's important to the Pantheon. It was important to Sargeras at an instinctual level. It's important to the Jailer, possibly because he knows more or is closer to that than some of the others. We talk about Kyresta giving up memories. Maybe she gave up the memory of what she was before. And what if that's why the Winter Queen won't talk about it? Maybe that's one of the memories that the Primus no longer has, or what was extracted from the Primus and used by the Jailer. What if that is part of why Denathrius says, you have no idea what you're doing, this is so much bigger than you can even possibly imagine? What if that's what he's alluding to? It just seems like all of these entities we're dealing with are pieces of a whole, but not entirely a whole themselves. Does that make sense?
Well, unfortunately, you've mentioned the Diablo cosmology, so now we have to talk about the concept of emanations.
Go for it.
In Kabbalism, and I'm going to make this as simple as possible, so if you're like an actual Kabbalah scholar, thanks for reading, I mean, listening to our podcast, Gerhard Sholem. But anyway, in Kabbalism, you start off with the original, the limitless light, the Ain. And then the Ain divides itself so that it can actually look upon itself from another perspective. And that's the Ain Soth. And that causes the Ain Soth ore to form at that point. And I know this is just for purposes of the discussion. It's way too simplistic. And
yeah, this is the fast and dirty version of it. Please take this with a grain of salt.
But when you do that, that's very similar to what in Warcraft terms, when the cosmos was formed, it was supposedly formed when the light looked upon itself and formed eddies, and the eddies were the void. The void was the places where the light suddenly wasn't, because it was concentrating in other areas instead of just being everywhere, which is what its original state was. We know that the light has a purpose and a will, and that its purpose and will is almost exactly negated by the void. The void is like everything that the light isn't, and vice versa. But here's a thought. This is something I want you to think about. The light would have had a If the light now has a purpose and a will, it would have had a purpose and a will when the universe was created, right?
One would imagine.
What if the formation of that purpose and the will was the point where the light and the void split off?
Mm-hmm.
That's the emanation. That's when they go from all things and therefore nothing to two separate things.
One that is very strict in purpose and another that sees everything as a possibility. Two very diametrically opposed things.
That, because that's now.
Yeah.
That's not then. At the point when the light created the void, because the light created the void was created by the light in this cosmology. The void was made by the light concentrating itself, so there were places it didn't touch anymore. And that separation, in Kabbalism, that's how the concept of definition is, when things can have discrete existence. If you go high enough up the tree, you know, the tree of life, the various, you know, from Kether to Malkuth, if you go up towards Kether, the closer you get to Kether, the less individual existence you have.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't. You if everything is all the light, there's nothing else.
Yeah, it's basically sublimation of individuality or something like that.
If there's no, not just individuality, but individual existence.
Right.
If you can't even have a shadow because there's nothing to cast a shadow. In order for there to be in order for shadows to be cast, things have to exist to block the light. And it's that existence that creates void. What if the void exists because the light wanted to create something that wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know,
and the void itself. Now think about what that would be. If you are all things, you're everything. The entire cosmos is just you. To use Marvel Comics analogy from the old 80s Secret Wars thing, if the Beyonder looked around at his universe and there was nothing but the Beyonder in it, because the Beyonder was everything in that universe, and then it decided to want to have an individual existence, boom, that's the point where you don't, you're not everything anymore.
But, you know, and that's kind of where I was going with this, because it almost feels like that would fit with something that would be the jailer's ultimate goal and what would be a huge sin in the eyes of everything that has now has a sense of existence. Because
if you think about it, the void ultimately seeks to break everything down into nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
Nothingness is not the original primordial state of the cosmos. In the Warcraft universe, the primordial state of the cosmos is limitless light. The light was first.
Mm-hmm.
In the Warcraft cosmos, there was no void that then said, let there be light. And it's the other way around. In the Warcraft cosmos, there's infinite light. And the infinite light was like, what if I wasn't everywhere? And it's the contraction principle, Simsum, from Kabbalism again. It's the idea of the light deliberately pulling itself in to allow other things to exist. And in that moment, creating its opposites. If we take what you're asking, it doesn't go back to individuals the way you're talking about, like where the Rune Carver or slash Primus, whoever it is, used to be in a group with the Titans. I think it's more along the lines of at one point everything was co-related because everything was one thing.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, is like that everything became pieces of that whole.
The first ones would have been literally the first ones.
And then the first ones stopped existing as they further separated.
Yeah, like when the first ones existed, the cosmos wasn't in any form yet.
But they then were they the formed things, it.
They were the thoughts by which the universe, the light, decided to create reality. And the light we have now, the holy light or whatever you want to call it, is not the light we had before, because that light contained within it all possibilities. That light was the void too. Do you see where I'm going with that? Like the concept is the void isn't.
But that's you're basically going exactly where I was trying to get with this, is this concept of, it's an older trope, and it's one that we've seen in a lot of other places. And I'll go with a pop culture reference that I think is almost apt here. And it's the Dogma movie, where Bartleby just wants to go home, and he does awful things to just go home. This huge cockamamie scheme, all this tragedy, all this heartache, all this destruction that he wreaks, you know, just to go back home. It almost feels like that's something similar to me, at least when looking at the jailer, because if he just wants to bring everything back together again, he wants to go home. It also fits with the idea of why Sylvanas would kind of go along with it, because when everything's together, there's no more death, because there's no more life. It's all one thing. There is no cycle anymore, because you've gone back to the original state. Planets, individual pieces of that, the void, all these horrible things that have existed, all these tragedies that have been visited upon all of reality, stop to exist because it all molds back together into one. But I can also see where all these entities that were created from, you know, that point down, like you were talking about, wouldn't want that, you know?
More importantly, here's the thing to consider when we're talking about that. In the original, in the Kabbalistic mindset, the universe exists because this cosmic mind decided it wanted to understand itself.
Mm-hmm.
It went from, I am everything, and therefore I am nothing, and there is nothing to know because it's just me, to dividing itself in order to create variation, which is the only way one can know oneself. There has to be a self for the cosmos to know itself. What you're talking about, if it is the goal of the jailer or Sylvanas or anybody, would be cosmic suicide.
Yeah.
It's the universe dying. It's what the void wants.
Kind of, but not in the same manner, though, right?
No, like, it's not in the same manner. The void wants ultimate universal abrogation. They want nothing to exist, and just nothing to exist. So they would exist and nothing else would. They're basically the cosmos's self-destruction in form. But that's not the same thing as death, because they want to exist. True cosmic death, nothing would exist. And that nothing includes the nothing of the void. The void is madness in a way, because it is that level of self-destruction as a principle. But at the same time, it's also potential and possibility, because you can only accomplish things when you're willing to accomplish them. It's when you're willing to go beyond what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the interesting dichotomy and the interesting contrast between those forces. But going through all of it, we still don't know that this is what the jailer is up to doing. We don't know much at all about what he's up to. But it is interesting to consider the possibility that the reason that the jailer says it's said multiple times that the jailer is coming to claim the soul of Azeroth is to achieve something along the lines of what both Sargeras and the Void wanted. Sargeras wanted to bring Azeroth forth as a, you know, kind of corrupted Fel Titan like himself. The Void wants to create a Void Titan. It's possible what he wants is a Death Titan, and that he wants the Death Titan as his... It's possibly what he was trying to do the first time. Whatever got him put in the Void... We don't know what got him put there in the Maw.
Trapped there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Why is he there? We know that the Eternal Ones put him there. They say so. They locked him in, including Denathrius. At one point, apparently, Denathrius thought this was the way to go. And now suddenly he's talking about like the change is coming and we're going to have this whole, like, what did the jailer tell him? What did he offer him? What is Denathrius getting out of this? You know, obviously it's going to be a change in the status quo of the Shadowlands. What is it? Why does he want it? I think that's a really interesting thing to think about in terms of what we're talking about. If there was once some kind of unity, some kind of combined force, some kind of entity that was all things, that it split itself up to try and understand itself better in some way. What's the end game of all this? Is the end game of all this that there would be nothing, that you return to like one, you know, we all turn back into like one cosmic force? Or is it a complete shift of the rules? And if so, how? There's a lot to this. Denathrius does not strike me as the kind of guy who'd want a cosmos anymore. Like, you know, why he opposed the jailer before, why isn't he opposing him now?
You know, and I've been thinking about that too, but I think it's also a limitation of who Denathrius is. And I think it goes back into that sort of splitting of the individual personas, because every single one of the Eternal Ones, the Pantheon of Death, has a very niche, like, personality trait. Like, Denathrius seems to be all about sort of, like, sensation. He's a sensate. It's this decadence. It's this feeling. It's this, you know, such delights and everything else. But where do you go after an indeterminate amount?
You just made me think of this.
Go ahead.
Just now. That they don't... Time doesn't exist there, right?
Uh-huh.
And they've all been there for who knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
What if the process is ongoing? Like, you start off as this cosmic entity that is everything, but then you deliberately contract yourself so that there are things that are not you anymore, so you can know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, you create other things. Denathrius, back when they first did whatever they did, hadn't been in charge of Revendreth all that long.
No.
Mortal souls keep showing up, and those mortal souls have with them the experience of being mortal. That's the whole thing, is like the idea is that, you know, every individual being you run into is like a part of the experiment, for lack of a better word. It's part of the test.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part of the self-test, trying to know yourself. They're like thoughts. Denathrius has been exposed to the worst that mortal beings have to offer for endlessness, an eternal tide of them.
Consuming that sin, ingesting it.
While, you know, we talked about the Archon has been ripping people's memories away from them this entire time to purify them. And she herself doesn't remember anything beyond her creation. The Winter Queen, we know that when the first mortal soul showed up and the Winter Queen was like, why are you here? And then she put them to work because she didn't really have anything else to do with them, but she didn't put them there. You know, they showed up, and is that before the Arbiter, or did the Arbiter start sending them there? Why is the Arbiter doing anything? Why is it like completely impossible? Like, we know for a fact that the Archon's people are still sending souls to the Maw.
And what's interesting about that is like
they can't even seem to think about what else to do. Like, they don't understand that, okay, that's bad, we shouldn't do that.
Well, which is interesting because like we talked about the Bastion stuff a little bit last week. And I guess we can bring it up again. Like, you do that whole thing where 2 weeks ago, excuse me, where like you are sent to go get a recently, you know, transitioned mortal soul from Azeroth and take it to the Arbiter. And that's when the Kurigan realizes that the Arbiter's out of commission, but the soul still goes to the Maw. You know, that's a weird hiccup, I guess would be the best way to put it. Why is that the default? Why is going to the Ubulet of the Spirit Realm the default setting? Like, It's fascinating.
Why is there a giant soul fountain in Orbos that goes directly to the Maw? Do not pass go. Do not toots, you know. And the Arbiter sits in it and normally blocks people away from it.
Uh-huh.
What if the Maw is... I don't know how to put this. The Maw is a prison now. The Maw is a place where things are confined now. But it doesn't have to... Like, what if the reason that they put him there was because he was already there? And whatever he was originally doing did that to it.
And what if part of that was... Because we don't know when the jailer was locked away there. But I've been... This is something I asked a couple weeks ago, and I bring this up a lot. The Shadowlands as a whole is chunks of floating pieces. What if everything was part of one whole land, much like Kalimdor back in the day, when everything was one big, like, Pangaea-style continent? What if that's what it was in the Shadowlands originally? What if, because, like, in the Maw, you have all of these different pieces that look like they belong in the other realm. You have bits of ruined architecture that looks like it's from Revendreth. You have bits of ruined architecture that looks like it's from Ardenwell and Bastion. You have soul gates, or whatever they're called, that have replaced the spirit healers. You have a First One's Gate. None of the other regions have a First One's Gate. And I would love to point that out. None of them do. Only the Maw does. And it leads straight to Orbos. And Orbos is very much a construction. It does not look like it slots in with everything else. It's clean lines, round, very much, for lack of a better term, man-made. That obviously didn't always exist. But what if all the other realms were butted up against each other at one point? What if whatever they did to lock him away created those other realms? And that's where these entities were born into these realms, is that moment. And that's why they don't remember anything else. They remember their birth. They didn't know what mortal souls were because they weren't clued into the process and then just kind of figured it out later. They didn't get instruction manual with their new land.
This idea is that they do remember locking him away.
Yeah, but what if they were necessary to finish the lock? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, they did it. This was something that they did. It's a decision. They're not components. That's my problem with what you're saying. I don't have a problem with the ideas about the realms, but I think the realms existed in some fashion before all this. Just there's a lot to it that we don't know yet.
Oh, and I agree.
And that's what's really fascinating to me, is like this idea of the Maw. The other thing is the Maw isn't central.
No, it's not. It's kind of off to the side.
It's off to the side, but I've been thinking a lot about the fact that there are so many doors in Orbos.
Mm-hmm.
I think Orbos was made first, and I think after Orbos was made, like, they made all those connections. They obviously made, I think, like, those realms existed. But what if they weren't realms yet, and they weren't separate yet? The Maw was the next place that got made, or the
whatever
Maw
it was before the Maw.
The Maw is the remnant of whatever was made next.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because the two connect. If Orbos was the place the First Ones operated from when they were making the Shadowlands, the Maw could be... I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. If Orbos is like their control center, the Maw might be the draft place. The CAD, for lack of a better word. Because it's we have the Emerald Dream, which used to be considered kind of like the building, like the design stage of Azeroth. And that's clearly linked to Ardenweald, which is itself like, it's a realm in the Shadowlands, but it links to the Emerald Dream, which is supposedly the design base for Azeroth. What if that's because Ardenweald is effectively that for the Shadowlands? And then I start thinking about, but then the Maw exists. The Maw, what if the Maw was supposed to be, like, there's supposed to be this hyper realm you're talking about, kind of like, you know, like a place where these things all exist in simultaneous place, where you have elements of Revendreth, you have elements of Ardenweald, you have elements of Bastion, you have elements of Maldraxxus. They all should coexist in one world. None of these realms are in balance.
You know, and that's what I was kind of, I guess, hinting at, or at least trying to get to it, because it the thing that's been bothering me since we started this is going back to that First One's Way gate, because it doesn't exist anywhere else. It is nowhere else but there. And what if that's the reason the Maw is like the default place? What if that was the original sorting hat? What even if these realms weren't so touched or connected? There's things that, like, I keep keying off of. They keep talking about these realms are, you know, our allies. They're our closest allies, and you need to go and do this and that. And it seems like you can go between the realms, and it looks like everything goes between Ouroboros now to get there. But what if that wasn't always the case? What if the natural order of things was, maybe it was the reverse, maybe the Maw came first and Ouroboros was created later to sort of replicate what was lost? You know, what if everything went to the Maw first and then went to the different realms because all the realms were interconnected? Because we know, like I said, the brokers can move between realms without using the Ouroboros system. They can go basically anywhere, and we know that they can definitely reach out into the prime material plane because they have captives that are
they send you through one of their portals. Yeah, there certainly is a lot to that to consider on that idea. I just keep coming back to this concept of, I don't know how to put this. What if we're looking at the mirror inverse of what we used to think the Emerald Dream Azeroth relationship was? And the Emerald Dream might be the Emerald Dream all like living things relationship, for all I know. And like, the Maw is the place where like it was supposed to exist, and when that got destabilized or destroyed or whatever, they had to create something new. And obviously the Eternals seem to be aware of the first ones.
Yeah.
Like, the Jailer is aware of the first ones. He, not just in a kind of, oh, they existed way, but in a, I knew them. You know, which, like, the secret they sought to hide. What secret were they hiding? Who were they that they were hiding secrets mm-hmm. from you in the first place? Like, what was your purpose? Why did you exist? Did the Titans exist in Azeroth's reality in the same way? Did you get thrown into the Shadowlands from some other plane of existence?
Or did a first one break themselves down by making that decision, and thus was born whatever we have in the Shadowlands with all these different entities? But there doesn't necessarily mean that there weren't other first ones that they interacted with. What if that had something to do with some of the creations of the other realms out there? Because that's the thing, right? Like, going back to the cosmology chart, we have all of these other realms that we haven't touched. We have an arcane realm. We have, you know, a realm of light. We have all these different pieces that we have not visited. And we don't know how they're set up. We don't know if maybe all of the first ones went in further, I don't want to say decimated themselves, but further divided, like you were talking about earlier, like that ongoing process of continued division. Because I think Revendeth is a really great example of that. You continue to see that because Denathrius, maybe the first beings he created were, you know, the Nathrezim, because they bear the most striking resemblance. But the Nathrezim are somewhere in between Denathrius and the Venthyr. And if you look at the Venthyr, they're created in like a lesser, but, you know, piece. Like, even the Council of Venthyr, they have specific spheres of influence, and it almost seems like, again, like you're saying, there's that further delineation, and that's an ongoing process. What if that's the secret? What if the secret is everything used to be, and I hate to bring it back to it, but like, that they were all born from one entity that was born from one entity that was born from one entity, that continued delineation. I could see why they would want to make sure that things didn't know that. I could definitely see how keeping that a secret would benefit the rest of the other realms, because then there's also that incentive. You have an entire, to bring Maldraxxus into this, we've seen what happens when they get bored, when they're tired of fighting amongst themselves. They go raid other realms. Well, if they knew that there are other realms out there beyond the Shadowlands that they could go and touch, would they? Would they be
They do know that, though.
But do they
all come from? They know that they come from another realm of existence.
But do they know about the arcane realm? Do they know about the realm of nature? Do they know about other places?
I mean, it seems fairly likely that they do, since they've actually been argued that they've defended against void invasions before.
Is that the promise that they were made that got them on board with the Jailer? That they could go and take care of these places? That they could go on conquest? Like,
I mean, we don't really know anything about that, the Maldraxxus stuff. It's actually kind of interesting, though. The idea that I feel like we're getting too far into the idea of, you know, everything was made from something that was made from something that was made from something.
Possibly.
When I think that it's simpler than that. I think that basically what you have is the consequence of an entity wanting to exist. The consequence is that other things now exist. When you split up, when you to go back to the Diablo cosmology, when the Diamond Warrior Anu pulled all the evil out of itself and threw it aside so that it could be achieve perfection, the evil coalesced into another being, Tathamet, who then battled Anu and the two destroyed each other. But that's if you're using that concept, where you're trying to purify or become perfect. If you're just trying to learn, then there isn't that necessary conflict in that same way. The Void's conflict seems to be from the fact that the Light wants to make everything into one thing. The Light essentially wants to return to a state where everything was the Light. But the Void doesn't want that. The Void wants to enter into a state where nothing exists. And everything is possible, but nothing actually ever happens. It's the happening that the Void has problems with.
Mm-hmm.
Once something happens, once it has... And think about, the Shadowlands exists free of this. There's no time in the Shadowlands, so things don't enter that state. There's no progression. So, of course, the Void wants to invade it. I think there's, like, a certain amount of... Why do you make the Shadowlands in the first place? Why is it necessary? What is Anima all about? Why is this something that exists in the first place? And that, I think, is the thing that, we'll touch upon, the great secret of the first ones, is why they did this at all. And did they do it elsewhere? Does Azeroth exist because the first ones did something there? Are the first ones confined to the Shadowlands, or are they cross-multiversal? Do they make everything? What are they? And that's something I'm thinking about a lot in terms of, you know, you seem to have been intimating that there was a first one that became the various members of the Pantheon of Death, that it split itself up further and became these figures. And that's one of the reasons why they don't remember or choose to remember beyond a certain point.
Maybe.
That's possible. I mean, I don't know. But I do think it's interesting to think about if the first ones are related to the Eternal Ones, if they're related to the Titans, are there... And are they related to the Void Lords?
Because we still don't know anything about those, right?
Like, we know nothing about the Void Lords. Are they related to the Naru? We know that the Naru can come forth into Revendreth and attack it.
We know that they can basically go where they want to go.
Yeah.
Through time, space, and reality. Yeah.
Yeah. How are they doing that? Are they going through the in-between? Do they have that ability? Have they been? Is that how Naru dimension ships work? What are the Naru, that they have a light cycle and a void cycle? Is that, like... Think about what that actually states. Are they like beings? Are they holdovers from like the universe before the split? Are they creations from after? Who made them if they're creations?
Mm-hmm.
And all of this comes back to around this idea that there's a ton of cosmology we don't actually know or understand yet. There's a lot going on. Even the jailer's taking of Charlemagne and turning it into something. If that's what happened, and again, I know you said you can see it. I can't see it, but I take your word for it because, I mean, I am legal. If he's doing that, why is he doing that? Why didn't he just make a new one? Why did he just choose to take Anduin's sword and change that?
Which, I mean, I think part of that, too, is because, again, it boils back to what you were talking about before, where it has to be a choice. Well,
yeah,
that's
his
father's weapon, right?
He's tied. It's not just his father's weapon. What? It's two weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Joined together
mm-hmm.
into one. They were two once. They weren't created as one weapon that was then split into two. They were created as two separate blades that were then recombined. They were combined into one thing that they were not before.
Shalator and Alamein, right?
Yeah. Shalator and Alamein were two different swords that were both given to the two different variants. The two different variants were one being who was split into two and then recombined into one. But the swords were just two separate swords that were combined into one.
Yeah,
that's a new existence for that sword. They didn't exist as a sword because it was two swords.
Yeah, and that's kind of like part of that is why I started going down that road about everything boiling back into one or that sort of thing. Because there's a thematically it seems.
But
like
maybe
this is
it's
repeating.
Not boiling back into one.
Or maybe
not,
it's going from one to the other, the reverse.
No,
way.
No. Listen, what if it is that he. There was a way things were, and the way things were is what led to the way things are. If you don't want the way things are, and you don't want to go back to the way things were, you need to make a new thing. But all you can make it out of are the parts you have. For the universe is, we're talking about being in the Shadowlands this whole time. We've been talking about anima and death. We're not really talking about one of the things we've seen a lot of, the House of Constructs, where they take corpses and make weapons out of them. The weapons he's using, all the soul-forged abominations, he's using people as parts. He's using souls as parts.
Mm-hmm.
He's necromancy. It's necromancy. It's necromancy on a cosmic scale.
Yeah, which is...
If he wants to create, quote-unquote, a Death Titan, what is he going to use it for? And the truth is, the Death Titan will be the building block of the new universe that he's going to make, which is a dead one that he has stitched together. that it's not that he wants to recombine it. He doesn't want to join everybody together. He wants them all dead so he can use them as parts. He wants existence dead so he can use it as parts, because that's what he's doing anyway. Everything he's doing with all those souls that come flooding into the Maw, ultimately he's using them as parts. Yeah. So it's a stitched together Frankensteinian creation. It's not the cosmos that was. He wants the secret the first ones had. The first ones had the secret of how to make things live, how to make things exist. He wants to reverse engineer it. He wants to make a dead version of it. Something that will never change. It will never. It will just be the Shadowlands everywhere forever, and it will never change. It will never be more of it. There will never be anything new. Why does he want that? Did he always want that? Is that what he tried to do in the first place? Is that why they locked him away? And what does it mean? Like, there's a ton of this we don't know yet. But that's what's interesting to me about this concept, is that the concept is, it's the opposite of the Void, because the Void likes potential and possibility and wants more stuff. The Void's terrified of too much, you know, limitation, too much stagnation. The Light wants light. It wants to illuminate. It wants to bring the light to truth. This is not that either, because this is the just the death of everything. It's a world where there is no possibility. There's no potential. You've gotten rid of all of it. You've made complete and utter uniformity out of it. It's very similar to Sargeras. It's order without any regard to anything else.
You know, and that's an interesting thing too, because like we know hearsay what Sargeras saw. What did he see that sent him on his path? What did he really? What was the truth that was revealed to him?
Well, whatever it was, he got it from talking to the Nathrezim.
Mm-hmm.
And where did they dealing with the Nathrezim, trying to get rid of them, trying to stop them.
And where did he likely, and where did we can speculate that they got it through Sire Denathrius or whatever that plan was. So yeah. Oh yeah. Super. It all comes together at some point. There's threads here. There's threads here that we can definitely start pulling on that I think are going to start weaving together real dang soon. But we are a little bit over time. Is there anything else you want to add before we call it good?
You already thanked people for sending the emails, but I definitely want to comment that thank you guys for the emails, because we kind of went on it.
yeah, seriously. And that's the thing. Like, one of the last week's show, we tried to do a little more speculation and less straight question answering. You're probably going to get a little bit more of that. But if you have concepts or questions for the show, send them in. We might wind up doing something like this with them, but we definitely read them. We definitely pay attention to them. And you can send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. If you don't want to do email, or if you want to make sure that you can get them to us in a more other visible way, we do have several Discord channels that you can go ahead and reach out to us on. Patreons obviously get preferential treatment as a way of saying thank you for coming to support us. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And with that, folks, we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.